or mediums that I use, but it's basically like a cross section of Vancouver. And so people will recognize certain areas in my paintings, and others are very abstracted, very heavy paint, very textured. And it's kind of social commentary, but also at the same time, there's a deeply aesthetic sensibility to it, where I'm really concerned about the application of paint and colors and all the formal aspects of an artwork. So that sort of describes, in a nutshell, what I do.
And may I add to that?
Wait a second. Mine, the nutshell is overflowing.
The biggest nutshell on the block, yeah.
No, I'm just impressed by both, in both cases, how you are bringing forth what's now. A lot of times when people go to the art gallery and typical school things, they tell you about what the art that was. But you are doing something that is really evolving and emerging. It's into now, but you can see where it's going. I was going to ask, and you kind of answered it, are there times that particular things call to you to bring it forth as a sculpture or to bring it forth as a painting? I'll stop with that question and go.
That's for Susie.
I'm asking Susie, yeah, are there, do, when you have a medium or you see a situation or read a book, does a particular medium call to you to represent your feelings or interpretation?
Well, I would say that I've always been more inspired by paintings than by sculptures. And but I've been inspired to create with clay first, with sculpture first. Maybe because I was a potter first, you know, I did hand-built pottery pieces. And so I would say that my brain thinks first three-dimensionally. But then, you know, sculpture, my sculpture and ceramic sculpture is also about painting. It's also about the surface. It's about the tactile surface, but it's also about the colorful surface, the visual surface. And then that lends itself to painting and doing paintings. So, but I would say that it's something very sensuous that calls to me, you know. And I would also say that what calls to me in all of my work is, and increasingly so, is I think it's really important to celebrate humanity and the human spirit, the potential of the human spirit and our creativity. And I think that there's a lot of kind of evil going on in the world that has to do with human beings on a number of levels. And I think that art is a place where people can see what is not evil, even if it's telling about some of that evil. And that is across the board on any creative field, you know, whether it's film or visual art or dance, whatever it is that it's incredible what human beings can do and have accomplished. And I think it's like our purpose to be putting that out there so that we make the world better. You know, and that it's not about feeling depressed or unempowered by the power, by what is considered powerful. I think art is powerful, and I think our creative being is powerful, and we need to put that out there in the world.
Well, that connects to David's word of promotion, promoting something positive, promoting that you don't have to do it the same way as someone else. Being able to mix mediums or speak to what calls to you, or not just, you know, that you could deal with sumptuous and at the same time deal with the spiritual or deal with just being with the art. So thank you for sharing that, because as you said, over the years, traditionally people have been taken to an art gallery and they've said, this is art or this is that kind of art. And kids or people don't want to do it because it has been given such a narrowness. So that breath of what you described and the joy that you had. Did you feel the joy in her voice that she was talking about?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
So
I teach children. I teach children at Arts Umbrella. I teach them clay sculpture and I teach drawing and painting. So I really want to, you know, I'm around that kind of energy, that fresh, innocent, open, curious energy, but also I'm around the energy of them being critical of themselves and thinking this is how something should be and I can't do it. And so I have a kind of mission around all that and personal experience around that. And I have students that I've taught from the time they're six and now, you know, either in their 20s or I'm teaching their children. Like it's, you know, it's amazing.
And is this teaching that you're doing in a school, or teaching that you're doing in the community or within your studio?
I have done all those things, not teaching as a teacher in school, but as an artist in the schools. But I teach at Arts Umbrella. I've taught at Arts Umbrella on Granville Island for 35 years, every Saturday, clay sculpture. And now I teach drawing and painting also on Sundays. So primarily at Arts Umbrella, and then some private lessons from my house for adults or for children.
And I'd just like to say, Susie posts her students' work on Facebook, etc. And it is just absolutely wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
that she's encouraging them to do, and the stuff they're producing. It's just remarkable, and it's very inspiring to me
to see
the work of a 6 or 7 or 8 year old child, and just the innocence and the fearlessness, which of course Susie encourages. So, and I just wanted to say that her students' work is just remarkable.
Thank you. Yeah, they're amazing.
I did want to ask, and this sort of is a nice segue into it. And, you know, Susie, you've talked about your relationship to teaching children. And but I wonder, again, maybe we can start with David and then Susie, you can chime in if there's anything unsaid. But I wonder about the experience of the culture call for kids. You know, like you mentioned, there being kids coming into the studio. What, in your experience, is that experience like for the kids who come?
I love having them. I mean, I just love it when I see kids. I got to be honest with you. I think I like kids better than adults. So don't tell anybody though. When the kids come in, they just run around and they touch things and they look at things. My work is pretty robust, so it can handle. It's not like Susie's that could get knocked off the pedestal or whatever. Mine is pretty robust, so I don't mind if kids touch it and the parents are freaking out and going, they're apologizing. No, no, it's okay. It's acrylic paint, and it's really thick and heavy. And just watching them, they're so uninhibited and so honest. And so if they don't like something, they'll let you know. I don't like that at all. That one's better than the other one. And I like green, so I like this one. And it's just, it's so pure and innocent. And they add such positive energy to the space. And it lingers for days afterwards, after it's all over. I still feel that energy in my studio. And I used to be a teacher, too, many years ago. So I have always enjoyed young people and working with young people and enjoy their perspective on things. And I think I learn as much from them or more than they learn from looking at my work. So anyway, it's just a joy to have them. And I encourage people to bring their kids. Bring your kids to my studio. I'll give them a little card or a little present or something like that, and they go home happy. And anyway, Susie?
Well,
don't touch the sculptures, right?
Yeah. Get out of here. No, I have a lot of my students come with their parents, and it's kind of cool because they know me as their teacher and looking at their work. And I talk to them a lot about the process of making art and emotionally what it is around making art, because, you know, they might be struggling with something and they need to kind of cherish what they're doing and where they're at in that moment. And, you know, the work that they do, like I was talking with Andre Sau, who's a fabulous teacher at Arts Umbrella, and he was saying an adult couldn't do this work if they tried. Like, I had just timed this work. You know, you just wouldn't think of that. And yes, you know, I've put these ideas into their head and shown them a bunch of stuff and all of that. But then what they do with it is incredible. So then when they come to the studio and they're looking at my art, they're kind of in awe, you know, which is very flattering. And you know, and sometimes their parents buy my work because they want their kid to start a collection, which I think is a really beautiful, beautiful thing to do. for your child. And then they're in awe of everybody's work, and they see that it's possible. You know, they see all these different spaces, and they're all different. And the artists are all different, and who's in the room at the time is different, and the music that's playing is different. And they're just kind of blown away, you know, and it makes it like, wow, this can be my life, or this is part of my life. This is important, you know, maybe. And for some kids, you know, they're not great at school. They're not great at the kind of academic school learning that has traditionally been what will mean if they're smart or not. What will mean if they're valid or not? And yet, what they can do, you know, creatively, and where their brains go when they're looking at something is beyond, you know, somebody being able to do math equations or something, or it's is legitimate anyway. So, yeah, I think it's awesome. And, yeah, don't break the work.
Well, Sierra, can we ask you, we've heard about the joy and the multiple types of ways that visiting the crawl or visiting people's studios educate them, excite them, inspire them. Could you highlight two or three other of the things that are happening at the crawl?
Yes, of course. So I mentioned the preview exhibitions already. And then we have the pop-up, which is part of the crawl this year. So the preview exhibition, I'll just reiterate again that they're The Cult, Strange Fellows, Alternative Creations, and Pendulum. As well as that, if you check on our website under the events, many of our wonderful artists are going to be doing demos and workshops. Some are actually really well-oriented for kids. I saw an animation workshop up there, which is wonderful, at Maker Labs, that kids could take part in. So those are a fabulous resource if you want to see artists, you know, engage in their practice. The demos are a great way to get that kind of real behind the scenes look on what does it mean to practice art or that specific type of practice. And then the workshops are a great way to get yourself in there and maybe try something new, maybe something you've been scared to try before. Learn a new skill, get inspired to make art yourself. I find the crawl is a really inspiring time for a lot of the people who come. You're surrounded by so much art, you're surrounded by the community, you're getting to explore and connect. And so I find the workshop would be a great way to engage. And again, that's just on our event website.
We also have for the workshops.
For the workshops, no fees. They're all free. So the workshops and demonstrations, you just have to check out when they are. The workshops are usually run first come, first serve, just depending on each of the artists have their own kind of capacity of how many people they can teach at once. But they're all free to the public. And then we also have some things that are currently still going on, like our moving art, which is our video film exhibition, which is up at Strange Fellows and also on our YouTube page. And then we also have recorded series of artist talks that we ran last week. If you want to meet and learn a little bit more about some of the artists participating in the Culture Crawl, those are up on our website, and that will be also be a part of this year's Culture Crawl as well.
That is wonderful. I mean, such a range of things, and the opportunity to take a workshop, learn to do something, see if you like it, and get feedback from others that are there, both from the facilitator as well as other people who are just trying it out. I wanted to ask both David and Susie, I'm sorry, do you, because you have dual techniques or medium that you use, does something that you feel in a day or see in a day, does something initiate one medium like sculpting or painting, which thing you're going to start with or which one you're going to represent that feeling with?
For me, it's just kind of a practical approach. I started doing the digital work during COVID. I'm in a shared studio situation. So in the very beginning of COVID, we didn't know what to do or where to go or who we should have contact with or not. So just to keep it safe, I stayed home and I got bored and I started doing digital work on my computer and learning some new skills and started posting them online, and people seemed to like them. So I continued, well, I would have continued either way, but that's how I got started on this photo-based kind of collaging that I print on aluminum. So that was kind of a practical consideration. But as I went back to painting, I decided to do both and to continue doing both. So if I have my really good camera with me and I take a photo of, say, the downtown east side, an alley in the downtown east side, because I have my really good camera with me, I can make a digital artwork from that. But if I don't have my good camera with me, just my phone or whatever, then that's probably going to become a painting because it's not good enough quality to do the digital work. It has to be really high quality images. So it's kind of almost arbitrary. If I have my good camera, it's going to become a digital piece. If I don't, it'll become a painting. And sometimes the paintings inspire the digital work and vice versa. There's kind of an overlap between the two. So I can't say that the theme is very similar. There's one of my paintings behind me, just a street. I often just walk around and shoot the city streets in my neighborhood, in my studio neighborhood, downtown, in the beautiful areas, in Stanley Park, downtown east side, the industrial areas, polluted areas, areas covered in garbage. That's an honest portrait of the city. So at the end of the day, I'm just trying to paint an honest portrait of Vancouver with all its warts and blemishes and everything else. And I'm inspired by life in urban centers and how people function in urban centers, and of course the dysfunction in urban centers, and all of those things inspire me, and all of them inform both media that I work in. Susie?
Thank you, David. So as I said before, I tend to start with I'm inspired by paintings, and I would say by other ceramic sculptors at this point in time. And I tend to work with clay first. But I've been working with clay. I'm really dying to work with paint now, because I've done a lot of clay sculptures in the last couple of years, and now I really need to work with paint. And what I'm inspired to do, and what I started to do on my I just got back from a sort of self-directed artist residency in Italy with my fellow artist, Laurie Goldberg, who's also in the Craw. And so I started doing drawings of my sculptures and then turning them into collages. So then I started ripping up images of the sculptures. And I also had, so that's like on photocopies. And I also have images of my travels. And I also have images of my paintings. And so I actually started out my creative life, I guess, as a child, as a dancer. Mm. And I thought I was going to be a dancer and a movie star. Mm. And never taking an acting lesson in my whole life. But so the work that I do that are the collages, and there's one kind of right behind me, are kind of like dancing figures. You know, they're animated and they're gestured, but they're composed of sculptures, like images of my sculptures, my paintings, my travels, and actually my drawings or parts of paintings, and assembled together. And I love doing that. I love doing that. And that leads to lots of things. And it's very much a kind of portrait of my life and my journeys, and incorporating travel.
I was going to say there are three E words that come to mind in the whole discussion of what's happening at the Culture Crawl, and also the ways that you practice and utilize your talents. One is explore, another is exercise, and the other is energy. because just when I think I have a few years behind me, but I can think when I was a child and I was writing little stories and so forth, and I said I wanted to write, you know, I was going to be a nutritionist or I was going to be a writer, and people would say, stick with one thing. So I love it that you've said, break the mold. You can shift. You can use something from this to enhance that. So mm-hmm. I'm really believing, I'm happy that people listen to and share this interview so that they can have an idea of the breadth of information and experiences that you will get from these and other artists. Again, how many artists, how many exhibitors are included in this event?
It is, I just checked it this morning, we are now at 516 artists in over 55 buildings this year. And again, 90 new artists this year. So a lot of people that you might be seeing seeing it for the first time, as it's their first time participating. So really exciting opportunity. It's fabulous.
Yeah, so get out there and get exercise. There are two groups that we often have on the Saluau show. My show is Saluau. My guest and I speak up so that people can listen up and act upon what they've heard. So you can act upon going to the festival. You can act upon getting exercise, being out in nature. We've heard from Eco Wisdom Group that sometimes people get a 20% increase in their vitality in a day from just getting up and being out in nature or sitting for a few hours among the trees. So there's this huge amount of real estate being committed to the festival. So you can walk, you can sit, you can talk with others. You've heard through the testimonials and stories that our interviewees have given, talking to, networking, not just staying in with one crowd, not just staying with the artists, but each has talked about teaching and being with children, the inspiration they get from children and the ways children are inspired and kind of validated from the crawling age up to now people that you're meeting as adults. And I wanted to ask you one other thing about mentors. How important do you think it is for people to have a mentor, and have either of you benefited from a mentoring experience?
Go ahead, Susie.
Oh,
whoever speaks first.
I think mentoring, that's actually something that I think about a lot. Because I teach, and I know that I mentor a lot of people. I know that I've mentored, hundreds and hundreds or thousands, I don't know, children, because it's 35 years at Arts Umbrella, and I teach about 90 kids on a weekend. So that's a lot of children, although there's a lot of repeats. But, there's me as a mentor. But for me, I am inspired by who I call my spirit mentors. And my spirit mentors are sort of the artists that I take on in my Ladies Not Waiting series. I feel like, someone like Frida Kahlo, who is a cultural icon. Everybody knows Frida Kahlo. Everybody knows her story. And you can see her paintings and you can buy, rings that have Frida Kahlo on it, and you can buy purses with Frida Kahlo. It's like kind of overdone. But it's really valid in that here was someone who, and this is what I find interesting in terms of mentoring. Here is someone and many artists and many creators who you know her story in that she had a lot of stuff to fight against because she had that terrible bus accident and she was physically and I imagine emotionally, traumatized for her whole life and suffered from that her whole life and turned to art, turned to creativity, turned to being her best self, the most original, unique self through her work. And that's why we kind of honor her. It's not only her paintings. And there's so many other artists and creators who come from that kind of a background. And for me, that's really important because, I have my own stuff that I don't need to go into. And it was really important for me to have mentors, really important for me to see another way of life, to see a way of living that would feel like this is what life is about and this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is who I am. So I think mentors are really, really important.
I'm sure people have loved having you as a mentor.
Yeah.
Well, each of you.
Well, I want to thank all of you, David, Susie, Sierra, for joining us here on Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon today. The Eastside Culture Crawl runs November 15th to 17th at venues across the city. That's right, right? Did I get that right?
I was good. 14th to the 17th.
All right.
Thursday to Sunday.
The Eastside Culture Crawl runs November 14th to 17th at venues across the city. Once again, thank you all for joining us. Any final words? Any final thoughts?
Just I want to thank Sierra for and all her, or sorry, Sarah. Is it Sierra? Yes, yeah, Sierra.
Yeah.
Sierra, for all the work she does, and all the volunteers, and even the city government, and even corporations and sponsors. There's just so much effort and energy and money that goes into this in order to make it happen. And I'd just like to thank Sierra and all her colleagues for the hard work they do. And it's much appreciated.
And I
and the media, of course, because you guys help us to get the word out. And exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, I ditto all of that. Thank you so, so much.
Well, thank you. And I invite our audience to join me again next week at 10 o'clock on the clock. But when people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time. I'm a poem time. Love time. From heaven to shine, love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme, love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon, love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers. To untie all life's ringers, poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery, time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place, place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine, love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme, love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon, love time, poem time, poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Is Bird Note. Northern cardinals are known for their iconic red feathers. Males are bright scarlet, and females sport red wing and crest feathers. So if you saw a northern cardinal that was lemon yellow, you might think it was a different species entirely. In fact, these are northern cardinals, but with a genetic mutation. All cardinals ingest yellow pigments in their food. Most cardinals' bodies change them into red pigments, giving their feathers their signature shade. But just a few cardinals lack this ability, resulting in a bright yellow bird. Unexpectedly yellow birds occur in other species too, from house finches that look like they've been dipped in egg yolk to red-bellied woodpeckers with golden-hued head feathers. The condition is called xanthochromism. Xanthochromism and other color abnormalities are rare, just a handful in every few million bird sightings. And the causes for these conditions vary. For house finches, diet alone is probably enough to turn them yellow. Field guides show only a few illustrations for a single species, but part of the fun is finding all the shades of variation in well-known birds. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.